interview with John Kerin, Minister for Primary Industry, Parliament House, Tuesday, April 18th, 1989. Do you want to ask questions, Greg? Or?
Yeah, okay. Well, the first area I'd like to talk to you about is the just your general attitude to the Parliament-Executive relationship. You've indicated there that it should be weighted in favour of the Executive. That's the way it is and that's the way it should be. How dominant is the Executive now? What sort of balance should there be between those two arms?
Well, I think the Executive is very dominant in the House of Representatives where you have the numbers because the numbers are used, and every government governing party that has the numbers will use them. There's simply no two ways about that. The checks and balances occur in terms of factional splits or coalition and factional splits in the opposition parties. Pressure comes from outside. The bureaucracy there, enormous bureaucracy, enormous coordination. The checks and monitors are there, so they're there within a party dynamic, within the bureaucracy, and from the general public and the stuff that's feeding in from the media. But the Parliament itself is rarely an effective check and monitor on the power of the Executive. Often it is after the event via the committee system, sometimes to the good, but really it's a question of Senate committees anticipating where they seem to have some time to get better legislation. And that again then becomes amendments. But the power of the Executive is pretty supreme. If you don't have the numbers in the Senate, this is just straight politics, you can't get a lot through. And the fact that the Democrats now tell us up to what date they'll accept legislation really means that there's no sense of putting legislation into the reps. The only cure for that is to make the Senate sit longer. And I think the reps should sit longer anyhow, but to what good? It only means that the senators sit longer again, and that's a real problem in terms of managing government business. I don't know whether we use the guillotine or gag much. I think we're letting people speak more down there than they are. One thing I must say is, being in the Executive as well, and part of the reason why I think the Executive has to govern, the Cabinet has to see the lot. I regard myself as a Cabinet Minister, not just pushing my primary industries and energy barrow, and the backbenchers only react to various pressures, either electoral or outside pressure, or arguments that on the face of them look reasonably rational, but are not considered arguments. And I really do think the Executive has that enormous bureaucracy, that coordinating mechanism, three very strong coordinating departments, now the super ministries, two industry departments in Foreign Affairs and Trade, with the Structural Adjustment Committee being effectively the Economic and Industry Committee of Cabinet, and with the sort of problems we have, that concentrates a lot of intellectual power more than any backbencher can marshal.
Well, a lot of the textbooks talk about parliamentary government or parliamentary democracy. How accurate is that? Should we perhaps call it party government in Australia?
Yeah, I think it's a rubber stamp. The Hawke is not a parliamentarian, and he's the dominant person in Australian politics. He and Keating is a parliamentarian. That's if you quote parliamentarians with people who can actually think on their feet and are good debaters. Jim Callan was a great parliamentarian. Gough Whitlam was a great parliamentarian in terms of debating skills. But I think the last great parliamentarian has been Whitlam. And he was, he ended up not being a very good politician because he was beaten by backwoodsman Joe twice, and all his reforms didn't have much staying power. But he was a man that used the Parliament, who still indexes Anne Hansard, and I know Gough very well, having his seat. That taught me a lot of lessons. You know, a consummate parliamentarian will get beaten by the numbers crunches. And with the Labor Party now, the entrenchment of the factions is also a very dominant force. And as I said,
how dangerous do you think that is? Is that?
Well, the quality of the ministry will go down, the quality of the Senate will go down. You're getting party hacks in the Senate from all the major parties. And some are just not doing any bloody work. And we have one senator who also has full-time money from his union and does nothing. I just think if you're going to have people coming from party machines going into the Senate on factional lines, it's very bad. Bad in my party, particularly bad in my party. And well, we just picked, this is not for publication, but the right wing picked at Gary Punch when you look, because there's going to be a New South Wales right winger, when really you should have been looking for the best right winger if you're talking about factionally, but it gets down to factions by states, and, yeah. and that just is very, very wrong, I think.
What about party discipline in general? I mean, a lot of people have spoken...
Well, the factions have given party discipline.
But right across the board, a lot of people have said, including Labor backbenchers, that party discipline could be lessened. You know, what would be wrong if on a few issues a few people crossed the floor? I mean, is that a danger for governments? I mean, that's always the argument. We can't have it. It's the thin end of the wedge. Yeah. As soon as we let a couple do it, the rest will do it.
Yeah, it's the power of the media. There's two, there's two enormous impediments to government, I believe, now. One is that material does not get circulated freely on key economic issues because it will either leak or the heavies will say it will leak. We don't have effective discussions on the economy anymore in the cabinet room, to my mind, because Treasury keeps the Treasurer captive, and because Treasury, Finance and PMC can keep it all in there together, and they or their ministers can always use the excuse or the reason with some validity that this material cannot be circulated freely in the bureaucracy, that this cannot be debated because it will leak. And so if you want to talk about a broad-based consumption tax, you cannot have a discussion on the pros and cons of that in the present setting. And you can't look at that again. It'll just blow. I wanted the IAC, the Resources Assessment Commission, to look, what would be a methodological study. And that was to investigate public resource use and what charge the public should make for access to public resources such as fish, petroleum, forests, minerals. A methodological study, but you couldn't do that because the moment I went there, the allegations remain, Ruby Main Cairns going to put a resource rent tax on every bloody thing. So there's enormous pressure out there on that. Now, crossing the floor, and everyone knows, and the Joe phenomenon last federal election, it's become a bigger and bigger myth. Well, it's not a myth, bigger and bigger view that if there's division, division in parties, that's by far the worst possible thing.
So one of the Labor backbenchers said to me that the Graham Campbell one, where he wasn't disciplined as much as he thought he would have been, he thought that might have been, he hoped that was the thin end of the wedge and maybe the rule could be relaxed. I mean, on those sort of issues where it's very important in their electorates, is that a problem if they...
ultimately it is. It's up to these own state branches to discipline if they so choose. You eventually head for a rabble, but Campbell got away with that because he's not in any faction. He's a loose cannon. He's in a telephone box faction. He's got all sorts of problems about what I'm doing in wheat. But I think this time I'm staying. But he had a sort of semi-political motivation in imposing me on wheat deregulation because he says, look, Karen, unless I oppose you on wheat deregulation, I can't really oppose any further moves by a future coalition government on Rogers deregulation. I said, Graham, you've got to look at the two different issues. Graham's a simple man. I don't mean that patronisingly, but he is a simple person and has an electorate where it's pretty good to be a wild dog.
Now obviously the problem with the media, I mean the coalition are copping hammering at the moment about this wheat thing in particular. Do you think it'd ever be possible for the media to not or to acknowledge that occasionally crossing the floor might be a good thing?
No, either. I think the press gallery is going down on quality. I believe the Whitlam have had a first class press gallery. I mean, you've got so many young people there that absolutely don't know any bloody thing. And they are never interested in the issue. They're interested in the brawl. And we have so much print media in this country. I think the pressure on those young journalists and the radio journalists, a story every hour, print journalists, to get the mob to read it. So people are kept excited about federal politics the whole time. And they're not kept so excited about state politics.
Well, I know from my dealings, I worked with McPhee for a while, and my dealings with the press gallery, I'm an ex-politics teacher, and it's just amazing. You know, 22-year-old journalist straight from Melbourne or Sydney, and they were writing stories, and they said, no, background.
Well, someone said to me the other day, journalists get in the bush, even worse. the removal of the sugar import embargo will stop our exports. And I said, how is that? Well, she said, the sugar farmers are saying. And I said, an import embargo allows sugar to be imported, which if it pushes out our production means there'll be more exports. Can't you see that? You never know what level to go in. Mm-hmm. So the media is, and there's a rat pack here, as you know, which was pretty pro-labour. I think it's starting to move away from us now. Just a handful of people. Grattan still preserving her integrity because she checks it out. And once you read, there's accurate. Kelly's obviously had a brawl with Keating. Oakes starting to see the main chance. Those three are almost dominant. Stickety is here, but a few others of quality, but not much. Then it just piles away. So all these young people worship the big three or four, or Peter Harvey on top. Few of the ABC fellows seem to maintain some sort of integrity, but they're always flawed in the eyes of the rest of the business community. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in that Parliament executive thing, then you're saying it's dominant and it should be.
Mm.
How important is the press gallery in that? I mean, because they do report in that way, will that mean that that's always going to be, and it almost has to be?
And the only... Now it's nearly all question time, isn't it? I believe my mob... Hannah's question time about it, but that's just my own view. The Labor Party's in a lot of trouble for three things. I think one's style, one's communication, the other one's just the basic economic problem we've got. The mob's sick of Keating slamming, the mob's sick of Hawke lecturing and hectoring, and we're not going to be able to... And Keating's oversold... Keating, to my mind, is oversold every time. He's a great salesman, all the rest of it, but now he's got no comeback arguments, whereas if he'd involved people with the problems all along, explain what the alternatives were instead of trying to maintain that he's totally on top of things, I think we would have been in a far better position now. But it just doesn't wash, what they say. So it's style communication and plus the fundamental problem. And that's there to be judged, I think, every day in question time. And that's where the power of the press resides, and that's where the government really has to get its act together.
Okay, if we can move on to the second main area I want to look at, just briefly. The new Parliament House, just your views in general, and then maybe how you think the new building might affect this Parliament executive thing.
Not much. I find that I wander around talking to backbenchers more than they come around to me, but the ones I feed, the reasonable rural provincial people, I work them the whole time. I'm just heading off now for 4 days in Northern Territory tomorrow. I've just been in West Tasmania, I've just been in Western Victoria, Queensland, Central Victoria, Jimmy Snows, David Simmons. I get round them all every 6 months, so we've got a very good, and we feed the backbenchers pretty well from here. Just been around.
Do other ministers do that?
I don't know. I think we've got a good reputation for it. So it hasn't changed. You have to walk further. If people can't bloody well walk, the problem's not big enough. That's my attitude. But we do it. We're on the phone the whole time to them, and we do spend a lot of time giving them stuff to handle. But see, in my area, I've probably got 1,200 media outlets, you know, just to cover all that is near impossible. So we've really now got a pretty sophisticated system of phishing press releases and all the rest of this, and who we should bring on radio and what we should do. So that's given us this view the whole time that we don't deal centrally at all through the press box. We put out far too many bloody media releases, but we've never... seen the central one, and everyone says Karen's a background person, quiet person, all the rest of that, but it's just that the dominant media, the city media, is not aware of what we get up to.
Well, in terms of the, obviously you'd prefer the facilities here to the old one.
I had the office I had in the old part of the house was as big as this, but I didn't have my own private toilet, washroom. The working facilities for the staff, in other words, were bloody abominable. reason why I came up one story was to get that light for staff through there, because the office I was allocated on the ground floor just didn't have much light, and I thought I'd put more staff to get a decent working environment, which is good.
But you don't think there's any problem in terms of a lot of people have speculated, and people I've spoken to have agreed that the informal contact, which is so important, you know, running into people in the toilets or the corridors and the
hallway,
that's gone. How important is that informal contact to the functioning of this place?
It was, but then again, you can never say anything. You can have any deep, meaningful conversations in toilets, because you had to check whether the doors were locked or not, and who was behind the bloody doors, quite frankly, you know. So it was just a friendly thing.
Yeah.
And a wink's as good as a nod. I think there was a bit of communication there, but I really do think if that's what it's got down to, you should be looking at other ways of communicating. But yeah, there was more contact. The caucus rooms, the party rooms, sorry, were just behind the chambers, as you know, and people used to go in there and play cards and talk, and you could sort of wander in. That's gone.
But you wouldn't place great store on that. I mean, I don't think that's a major problem for government and how it operates, or Parliament how it operates.
No, but the thing that's knocked me around is the super ministry. That's my big problem, because just the learning curve I've been on, and I really am, well, last night I had 4 hours sleep. I normally get by in 5 hours sleep now. I go to midnight and get up at 5, and I don't know how long I can keep that up for, but sometimes I just crash a weekend, but I've had about 5 weekends off this year, that's all. So it is that enormous work on the key ministers, or the portfolio ministers, that has changed my perceptions of the whole, the way the whole world goes, because you've got 30 bloody ministers, some of them have got departments of 29.
Well, should there 29. Be more ministers?
No, you've got 22 ministers in a small cabinet. That's a factional thing, you know, we couldn't resist, so we went from 27 to 30, and it's just bloody nonsense.
Well, if we can move on to the last one, which probably covers a lot of what we've done anyway. Parliamentary reform, or reform within this building and how it operates and so on. I listed some on that survey, and there's a few there that you did agree with.
It's very best this.
It's towards the end. It starts from question statement 23 on. You've mentioned Parliament should sit longer each year.
Yeah.
Is that basically for the reason you mentioned about the Senate?
Yeah. I just think that, and I also,
a lot of people argue that the Senate is an example of a revival of Parliament into the Senate committee system that Murphy and Hodges set up.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. It's a place where actually the ministry and the government can be called to account.
Yeah, I can see that. And Murphy apparently transformed the Senate with his Senate committees and all the rest of it. First of all, I think the Parliament should sit longer, because I think there just simply needs to be more deliberative debates in an ideal world. You have set piece speeches down there. There is no notion of debate in that place. I think there's a bit more notion of debate in the Senate, and you get more political thuggery there. You get more political philosophies, you know, very big and very common, more philosophies articulated in the Senate. What worries me about the Senate committee system, and I think I referred to it, because Brian Archer was wound up by either four fishermen on the West Coast who were appealing to me, or through Robin Gray, a fisheries regulation had to be held up. And I eventually had to go before the committee because the officials couldn't handle it. I went before them twice, the first time in ignorance and the second time because they just couldn't handle the stupidity of the politics of it. Now, that's not a... I don't mind. I don't know.
He was doing that on his own without any party. I mean, he hadn't gone.
Yeah, but anyone can get a bloody committee now, and you just persuade the Democrats, and you've got it. There's a committee now on animal on aggregate chemicals. I won't go in the background of that little boy, but that's causing me great aggravation, and I don't actually mind. But how that comes up is just a few people get to the Democrats. Boswell sees great politics in kicking shit out of me on sugar, and he just keeps on running this story that it's going to cost $300 million, which really means that the Australian market, 70% of Australian market, is going to be taken over by imports, and we're going to throw that into the sea. Yeah, that's how his figure comes up. It's just stupid. But he's got this rotten bloody committee, and it's wandering around the sugar areas, and it's for politics. It's straight politics. It's got nothing to do with inquiry into the functioning of the parliament, legislation. And there becomes, I know it's a fine dividing line, but there comes a time when if the Senate's going to behave like loons, they call them, I think they're starting to beat the Senate committee system down.
Mm.
I actually do read Senate committee reports, summaries and recommendations for a kickoff, and then I think, well, there's something in this, so I flick it to one of the staff people and make sure we actually take it on board.
Mm.
I don't know whether our ministers do that, but I think most of the time the central bureaucracy is just ignored. Committee reports, except, you know, they're going to do it formally, but also I just don't think they just wash over it.
Mm.
So I don't know whether Parliament's improving as a result of it. I don't deny it, but I am worried when they're becoming more and more political and sort of defiling the coinage, whatever the word is, you know.
Mm. Mm.
More free votes wouldn't hurt.
Someone suggested to me, again, it was another Labor backbencher who said in London, where they have first, second, third line whips.
Mm.
It's only on the third line whips that you really are committed to vote for your party.
Mm.
And on quite a few issues, you know, they cross the floor over there, yeah. Maggie Thatcher hasn't fallen as a result.
Mm.
They're saying, well, why couldn't that happen here?
It'd be seen as well, see, because, oh, I think smaller numbers. Again. Smaller numbers, media. Yeah, and more traditional view of Parliament there. I don't think the British press is quite as thuggish as ours. Speakers should have a more independent role. Yeah, but first get stronger speakers. I reckon that's just one of the biggest problems the Parliament's got privately.
A few people have said that privately.
I think we've had a wooden skulls as the last good speaker. I think Stead wasn't too bad.
So it's not really a matter of the procedures and the backup for the speaker, it's there, it's personality.
Yeah, I think the Parliament's too small to have an independent speaker, and I think the politics in Australia are too much interest-based politics to allow a speaker to survive unscathed in an electorate.
Mm.
You know, I think that would require a great deal of negotiation by the major parties.
Mm.
But I wouldn't worry me if we did have an independent speaker totally, but the best speaker, I suppose, at present is Clary Miller. He'd be about the best, wouldn't he? The deputies. But we've got some deputy speakers absolutely bloody painful, and I shouldn't reflect on Jane, but she shouldn't let Tuckey get away with what he does, and shouldn't let our people get away with what it does. But I think Hawke and Keating buggered Jane a bit by pushing their luck with her too much too, and she wasn't going to take them on.
Mm.
And once you get that out, once you've got an ounce of weakness, you'll just get exploited down.
That also creates the other problem where, I mean, Question Time is what the media concentrate on.
Mm.
That's what the public tend to see and hear, and they highlight all the points of order and the arguing and whatever.
The best thing we could put up now would be Clyde Harley. Clyde's a bastard, prepared to be a bastard, but I think he could be a fair bastard.
Mm.
And I think that would be wonders for the Parliament.
Mm. And it's outside image.
Mm. Yeah, tremendous. Question Time should be extended maybe for something interesting. Yeah. You've got to change the standing orders, I reckon, because I give answers that are too long. But bloody hell, I think other people are worse than me.
Mm.
And I think I'd push it out to an hour, allow supplementaries, but really change the standing orders to an hour speaking about it, chop down the answers without becoming irrelevant.
Have you discussed that with other ministers? Do you think that there'd be a view on that?
I've not discussed
it. Would make life a bit harder for ministers.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Mm.
None of us are right now.
Mm.
Electronic voting. Like I said, that doesn't have to be seen by the public. I get a bit worried. When you were asking a while ago about the House, there's one thing I must say. The chamber itself is too much of this atrium. It's. I guess my eyes are going a bit now. I can't see the back of the galleries. I don't have, you know, yes, there's this anonymous audience there. It's very hard to see people at the back of the chamber. There is, and the directional speakers mean
they have to face.
Yeah. There's just no feeling there.
Well, Steele Hall very strongly put the view that he said there'll be no orators come out of Parliament if this new chamber.
That'd be terrible. It just feels anonymous. I just feel as if I sort of have to go down there in the public square and come back. It's really funny.
Mm.
It doesn't hurt to be seen with the public. You've got a really big press, a really big gallery now, and none of them can understand why we're not there all the time. Parliament should be televised. Yeah, on an edited basis. I see what they do in the United States. Debates, there's plenty happening there. I think who would edit it would be a real problem. But I just don't think you can resist that.
They've experimented with televising parts of the committee system there, a drugs in sport one, for example. A lot of people said that's a good thing, but from what you've said about committees, maybe would you see that as a danger? I mean, some people...
Oh, yeah, but it depends. Yeah, there's dangers in lots of things, but there's also the question of responsibility. I think that people have to understand that if committees are going to be televised, that we don't want any bloody film stars and posturing. It's going to be... See, the media's got enormous responsibility. I keep on putting it to them. I've just had Sunday follow me around for three bloody weeks, and they say they can't peel away the veneer, you see, enough and all the rest of it. About 10 minutes, Jim. And 10 minutes?
Yeah.
They can't get down the real carrot. And I said, well, you know, you're not going to get it, because we'll act responsibly. And I said, I take a lot on trust. I said, I get a big grinning picture of myself, and I see the rural media television out there, 5,000 cattle got killed today by anthrax, and the Minister of Prime Minister here, like that. What they can do to you, you know a horse going bad temporarily when they run the bad pictures in the media. So there's a responsibility of the media. There's a responsibility of the committees if you're going to go that far. And that's got to be thumped into them.
You mentioned there about the committee system in general. Now, a lot of people have said they are good and there should be more of them, they should be given more power. Yeah. But other people have also mentioned that the talent's getting spread very thinly, it's hard to staff them and get the numbers on them.
Well, now we've got these party committees, and I've got bloody people who are party chairman, and this is all part of the patronage, which is now put out in a factional system. Absolutely fucking hopeless. They're coming to me all the time wanting references. And I know what we're doing with forestry, the industry committee, whatever it is. I forget who chairs a bit, or he's coming to some forest. And I said, for God's sake, we've got the Resources Assessment Commission setting up. We're trying to get the forest inventory together with the state governments. We've got the Forest Accord being negotiated. We've got every bloody forestry issue in the country alive. And you want to set up a parliamentary committee to look at forests. I says, you'll just jam the department down and do nothing else in the whole resource management area.
That would also be self-defeating, wouldn't it? There'd be so many reports the government can't respond to anyway, and they'll just sit and gather dust.
Yeah. All the time they're coming to us for bloody references.
Mm.
I'm quite surprised about that.
Mm.
Backbenchers, I reckon they're good enough. I reckon most of them are engaged in political work most of the time. Private members, well... Keith Wright's at this morning, I think. Do you want to go through the other ones at all, or have you got enough?
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to that? Anything about any other reforms? Or
no, party. But necessary. I get upset by the Congress. God, that's terrible.
Just asked you a general question about the Parliament, just how effective should it be in monitoring and scrutinising the executive? Or are we now relying more on Auditor Generals and Administrative Appeal Tribunals?
I see what Taylor's doing, but we've got Finance and Government Operations in the Senate, we've got Public Accounts, we've got Public Works, and we've got another Finance Committee. I think there's three or four main committees now, and I think in my time on the Public Accounts Committee, I formed strong views about the capacity of the auditor to respond to us and departments. And having been a public servant, knowing where some of the skeletons were buried, I also knew that they never got right to the bottom of it, and all these Senate Estimates Committees don't get the bottom of it. So I realised there's room for more But I think you'd be better off building up more powerful staffs on the, those key accountability committees. Within our department, we're putting, with the Statutory Marking Authority Reform, Research Council Reform, we are putting in accountability mechanisms which require my department to measure accountability, and also just put in fraud control measures because we handle so much money. And so there's an enormous amount of accountability outside of the parliamentary system in terms of the overall running of government.
Do you find as a minister in your area that the spotlight is on you enough to check the things that you're doing? Or do you think there are areas where they miss?
I always think there's areas I miss because every now and then I find out something in my department's estimates. We've been gone through the exercise so many times now, there's no fat left, and there really isn't. But every now and then you'll find that there's a single line that covers a few things that you never knew about. But by and large, it's pretty well purged now, I'm really convinced. And I'm super sensitive in terms of administration. I spend a hell of a lot of time on administration in the department and following up, because it's my